The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
And that's the thing, is the model for years was so heavily focused on K minus BB. And it was like how people were building their fantasy teams in 2015. You know, it's like things had passed beyond that point so much. And understanding all of those, you know, little details about pitching, I think is what just set them so far behind. And I think that that's what, as a Cardinals fan, you have to be hopeful about, is that we're progressing into a modern age that, you know, hopefully we're not going to miss on those same sort of picks.
The best fans in baseball deserve the best podcast in baseball. It's BPIB. Here's your host, Derek Gould.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by Jeff Ponce of Baseball America, a minor league writer there, prospect writer there, who has done, it's already debuted, the top 10 prospect in the Cardinals organization, but just recently finished the top 30 for Baseball America's indispensable handbook that comes out in the spring that gives an overview over all 30 farm systems. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me. I want to start right off by asking, all right, you have to decide who is the number one prospect in the Cardinals organization. And you effectively have to choose between a guy who's had two guys who have been in the majors, one of whom has pitched quite well in the majors and elbowed his way into consideration for the rotation next year. But beneath the surface of the majors, you have the seventh overall pick, and then someone who has done something in minor league baseball that had not been done in the Cardinals system really since Rick Ankiel came along. That is, those two are, of course, J.J. Weatherholt and Quinn Matthews. I imagine it came down to those two. How did you decide who was tops?
Yeah, it came down to those two. And I think some of it is going to come down to amateur pedigree to an extent when you're talking about Weatherholt. You know, this was one of the best hitters in college baseball over the last decade. Just from like a pure hitting standpoint, there's not much that Weatherholt can't do when he's fully healthy. You know, he gets on base, he hits for contact, he doesn't strike out a lot. There's power in the bat as well. He can run a little bit. And then on the defensive side of the ball, chance to stick at shortstop. The organization certainly feels that way. I think he probably ends up a third baseman and is pretty good there for a long time.
Interesting.
I think when you look at Quinn Matthews, Matthews is a lot closer to his ceiling at this point. I don't think any of us that saw Matthews in college anticipated he would be sitting 94 to 96 miles an hour as a professional a year later. It was the biggest shock of the year. I think between Quinn Matthews and the Red Sox, Christian Campbell, who had an outstanding year, was our minor league player of the year. Matthews was our pitcher of the year. Mm-hmm. Both those guys were like kind of unbelievable stories of players who had very different identities as college players. I mean, Matthews was a guy that went back to Stanford for an extra year after getting drafted by the Rays. Having had some conversations with Quinn prior to him being drafted the first time, so summer 2021 in the Cape, I live out here in Massachusetts, so I'm around these guys a lot in the Cape Cod League. And I remember sitting down with Quinn and just chatting with him. And, you know, like a lot of players, you talk about Bizzani, you sit down with Travis Bizzani, number one pick. Travis is going to talk your ear off about hitting for an hour, right? You sit down with other pitchers, Bryce Hubbard, a guy that was, you know, with the Reds right now, was with FSU, was on the Cape, was really good in that same summer. He'll talk to you about pitching. He'll talk to you about, you know, the grips he's working on, the stuff he's working on in bullpens. You sit down with Matthews, he's going to tell you jokes. He's going to talk to you about the stock market. He told me, like at the time, he told me he wanted to be a stockbroker and not a professional baseball player. So I never in a million years, like when we did the handbook last year, he was like a, you know, a guy that was in the 20 to 35 kind of range.
Yeah.
That you were like, all right, if this guy even has any big league career, because he was sitting 90 to 92 at Stanford. Okay. This, you know, this guy's set up to be a big leaguer for a year. You're like, he's one of those rotation depth. He's completely remade himself to the point now that, you know, this is this is a number three starter, and we don't throw that tag around a lot. That's a 60 grade player. And I mean, this guy, I honestly think is the best player rotation wise that they've probably developed in 5 to 10 years. I mean, it's really interesting where they're at with Matthews, because I don't think in their wildest dreams they anticipated this would happen, but it's sort of the same playbook that they've been running over and over again, more or less unsuccessfully, with college starters that don't throw that hard over the last 5 to 6 years. And it finally popped. And I think that, you know, he legitimately could enter this season in the rotation. If he's not in the rotation week one, I think you're talking early May.
Yeah, a lot of that will be in spring, but they're going to leave it wide open for him to make some noise and push people out. Not on the 40-man roster, as the Cardinals like to remind us, but that doesn't matter with performance and with what they're trying to clear. Can you elaborate on what you mean by, like, is he out of central casting in the sense of what you're describing there, that he was a college pitcher, big conference, good numbers, not a lot of strikeouts, that he just kind of fit the Cardinals mold of who they went after? Is that kind of what you're describing there?
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of a style of player that the Cardinals have kind of become notorious for drafting is guys like this. And I mean, Michael McGreevy, to an extent, was this kind of a pitcher. You know, he's a right-hander. The stuff is a little bit different. Never had that velocity pop that, you know, you obviously got with him. But I think you kind of go back and you look at a lot of these guys. Graceffo is another one who was a softer thrower in college. He did have a velocity bump, and then it kind of tricked back down again. But you look at their drafts over the last 5 years, and I feel like they constantly sort of go after, you know, these softer throwing guys that they think they can put more velocity on. I mean, their first three picks in 22 and Jerpy, who I love, by the way, Motz, who I don't like as much, and then Pete Hansen are all sort of that mold. I mean, Hansen really is like a Quinn Matthews clone of what he was like in college. Soft toss and left-hander, big program, pretty good performance numbers, but stuff that you didn't think projected as a major leaguer. And that's certainly not the case as we sit here and talk about it in, you know, December of 2024.
Yeah, the Cardinals had great success when you think about, like, Waka, but, you know, Dakota Hudson provided early, then didn't really rebound after elbow surgery. Jack Flaherty was a high school pick, so he doesn't really fit into that group. But you think back to, you know, Marco Gonzalez would be in there. Just these, like, steady college. You could go all the way back to Lance Lynn. But there was, like, this dip here recently. Do you think that was because as much of who they were drafting, or do you think that was reflective of how they were developing who they were drafting? Those are two different things. And I wonder how you kind of look at that when you're not just rating prospects, but also rating a system.
Yeah, I think that there has been a contrast between the types of traits and how they identify hitting talent in the draft or internationally versus how they do it on the pitching side. The hitting side has been more progressive. They were one of the first teams that were looking at exit velocities and looking at, you know, angles and a lot of that stuff. And I think that when you look at the generations of players that have come over the last, we'll say, 10 years through the minor leagues, there's been a lot of good position players. They may not all be with the Cardinals any longer, but they've developed a lot of good position players. And they, you know, part of it is identifying. Like, player development is great. There are times where, like, a Christian Campbell, there's guys like that where they take to a certain player development environment and take off. A lot of it is still on the players. You know, we may not want to say that, but a lot of it is, what do these guys do in the off season? Are they working with good trainers? Are they people that are willing to be uncomfortable? Are they willing to do different stuff? So I think the player development thing is some of it is on them. Some of it is on pitchers within their organization seeking opportunities to get better. And I don't know if they've had a whole lot of those guys. I think the other thing too is other teams have gotten much better at identifying good pitching traits. Like, there's no analytical profile that fits the Cardinals organization. The Rays have that profile. The Mariners have that profile. The Brewers definitely have that profile. You look at the organizations that do the Braves, the teams that do a good job of bringing in pitching talent, whether it be from the draft, whether it be via trades, whether it be the international marketplace. Those are the organizations where they're targeting certain traits to begin with. So they're sending in, I always sort of use this analogy. They have a good French chef in the kitchen. They're mm-hmm. buying ingredients to make a French meal. They're not trying, they're not buying tortillas and, you know, meals to make tacos, because the French chef doesn't want to do that. That's not what he's trained to do, right? And yeah. So I think it's part of that. It's identifying what your player development does well and the types of pitchers that you want. I don't think they have that defined philosophy. And I think it's one of the reasons that they've fallen so far behind in pitching.
So how do they get there? Yeah.
The good news is, you know, you brought in Chaim Bloom, who won't get the credit necessarily. He remade that Red Sox system. He remade that Red Sox program. He brought in certain styles of training and certain people, even the hitting development stuff. Breslau's going to get credit for that. Mm-hmm. All right. Campbell was a product of that. Anthony's a product of that. Chase Meidroth. I mean, all these hitters that they've had, that they have, or they've been able to trade for pieces, were all a product of that. The pitching for the first time in my life is interesting, from the sense that you go to a Red Sox minor league game and you see arms coming out of the bullpen that throw interesting stuff. They have fastballs in the mid 90s. They have good breaking balls. They have weird release points. They all have different arm actions. That's the kind of philosophy that I think the Cardinals need. Mm-hmm. And that's what Bloom did bring to the Red Sox. Like I said, he won't get credit for it, but you know, you look a year later and that system looks very different than it looked 3 years ago when he took it over from Dombrowski, who, you know, Dombrowski went and he won, but at the same time kind of set fire to that system a little bit over the course of a couple of years and didn't draft that well. Where I think, you know, Bloom being involved means there's probably going to be a more fleshed out top-down philosophy on pitching. And I think that's what they need.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If your job at a healthcare facility includes disinfecting against viruses, you know prevention is the best medicine. And maintaining healthy spaces starts with a healthy cleaning routine. Grainger's world-class supply chain helps ensure you have the quality products you need when you need them. From disinfectants and cleaning supplies to personal protective equipment, so you can help deliver a clean bill of health. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you think they have as far to go as Boston did in that description? And, of course, the follow-up to that is then how fast can Chaim Bloom get the Cardinals up to speed?
Probably not as far to go. Like, I think you're starting from a better starting point than the Red Sox were at that point, just from a talent perspective. I think it will take a couple of years. It's going to take a couple of drafts, you know, of them targeting guys with traits that they like and they think they can improve. So that's going to take a few years. It's not going to be an overnight sort of thing. because you need a couple of cycles of player acquisition in there. And some of it might be trades too. But I think that that's the big part of the draft, is it allows you to kind of shape a system in an organization in your image, the way that you want things to look and the types of players that you want in that organization. So it will take a couple of years, but it happens overnight, that it's one of these things that we look down and there's five or six good pitchers in the system. A couple of them might be relief arms or whatever, but all guys are like, these guys have, you know, average regular futures. So 50 grade futures are better.
Do you have a feel for how it got this way? Do you have kind of a insight as to your view of what happened with the Cardinals and where the erosion began? Because it does feel like exactly like you describe, improvement happens where it takes several years and then it happens overnight.
Yeah, I think that as some of the front office talent started to bleed out to Houston, that's probably the beginning stages of it. And it's funny because I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who was with the Houston organization, is no longer with the Houston organization. And I think there's a lot of similarities to where the Cardinals were 5 years ago to where the Astros are at right now, where you have like this aging core. The drafts haven't yielded the same amount of talent that you had hoped. They have more pitching right now, but they could get to a point if certain coaches leave, certain people in that front office leave, and they kind of have been, where that pitching development pipeline and the coaches that you had and the people you had in your front office, you know, whether it's in analytics and R&D or in scouting, are no longer there, and you can't run that same playbook over and over again. And so I think that's what happened with the Cardinals, is they tried to run that same playbook over and over again, and other teams caught up. I can't tell you how often they've gotten sniped in the draft in terms of, we really like this pitcher, and he went a few spots ahead of time. But you have to have a bunch of options. And I think, like, you look at the teams that are good at developing pitching, because I think hitting-wise, you can't really knock the Cardinals that much. They seem to bring a guy up to the majors every year. Jordan Walker didn't work out, but I think that's a whole other conversation. We could probably go on a tangent for an hour. I don't know if it's the organization as much as it's some of that is the player's philosophy in terms of why he struggled. But I think you look at the pitching side and you say, this has not yielded the results that we hoped it would. And I think they're kind of at the end of the cycle of realizing that the way that they've approached it over the last 5 years has not been good. While there's been an insane advancement in not only the amount of measurables for pitchers, but the amount of people that understand advanced data.
Yeah,
like that's in 2020. I didn't understand how to read TrackMan data. I can go to any park right now and I can read every number on that screen, and know what it means.
I think that's a fascinating element that you brought up, is that there's so much information about pitchers that it's important to have people who not only know how to read that, but know how to cut through the noise of it to what are the indicators. Like we can look at a lot of fancy data, but what are the true tells, and it's one thing that the Cardinals did well, which I think you touched on there, is, one in the early days of Jeff Luhnow and Sig Madahl and that group being with the Cardinals, they were able, and Michael Gersh was a part of this, where they were able to create a model where they could take in information from a smaller college and synthesize it to what were smaller college players and how would they perform at bigger colleges, or more precisely how they could perform in minor league baseball. And they felt like they had a really good modeling system to do that. That gave them a window into who to pick later. They were a team that was constantly picking later and yet producing strong players later in the draft. I can't tell you how many times, like you were talking about how they got picked off a few times in the draft. There were so many times where they had to sit there and go, wait a minute, that's a guy that we liked, but we thought we were the only one who liked. How did they do that? And it's like, well, word is out, the other teams are catching up. Dan Kantrovich, I think we shouldn't overlook his role. He had a great part here. One of the things that has also contributed to this is 2017, just that they didn't have a draft because of the sanctions to the due to the hacking scandal. And you know, that is this era, you know, that's kind of this era right now. They would at least be helpful, if not impactful, that draft. You mentioned hitting, and I think it's really interesting. You're right. Like, when you look at bulk and when you look at numbers and you look at other rosters, the Cardinals have provided the majors, whether in their lineup or other lineups, quality hitters. But can you say they produced a star hitter? Can you say that they produced like that impact hitter that you know we see elsewhere? Well, Matt Carpenter, maybe, right?
Yeah, I guess he certainly had years where you hit those sort of highs. It's funny because you look at the lineup and it's heavily homegrown. Mason Wynn had a good rookie year. I think Alec Burleson was a breakthrough this year in some ways. You know, Brendan Donovan, to me, I love Brendan Donovan.
Excellent player.
He's one of my favorite players. He's one of my favorite people. I've gotten to know Brendan a little bit. He's a Patriots fan like me. So
there you go.
We have a mutual friend, Matt Pajak, who's like best friends with Brendan. So that's he does cool. podcasts with a couple of times a year, and we chat here and there. So I'm a huge Brendan Donovan fan.
Yeah. So are the Cardinals. They're hitching a lot to him.
Like, heart and soul kind of guy, too. You know?
They want him to be a leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah. You got Lars, you got Jordan Walker, you know, Ivan Herrera, Victor Scott II, you know, Nolan Gorman, Sajacy, technically is kind of a homegrown guy. So it's a really homegrown, it's a really homegrown team from a hitting perspective. But as you said, nobody's kind of taken that step forward and become a superstar yet. Some of that, I think, is just they've tried. You know, like, I think we thought Jordan Walker was going to get there, but he just has not committed to making the changes in his swing to elevate the ball consistently. And that's an issue. I mean, when you're the type of hitter that he is, he can't be a guy that's hitting the ball on the ground 45% of the time. You know, you need to have a fly ball plus line drive rate if you're that kind of a power hitter of, you know, 55% plus, and he's just not there. So I think, you know, that's not their fault so much as I think we thought that player was there, right? I think we thought Gorman could be a Matt Carpenter type, like an above average regular that had some good seasons. He hasn't developed into that. I don't know how much of that is him really not having a standard position and kind of playing all over the place and out of position too. I think he's a corner infielder, not a second baseman.
And that's their hope, is they're thinking is that he'll be their third baseman if they can make this move for Nolan Arenado. That's the idea. Yeah. I mean, his swing also got really slanted. You know, and the major leagues are ruthless. They see a hole, they're gonna make that pitch that AAA pitchers aren't, and they're gonna make it over and over and over and over and over and over again, and eventually send you back to AAA. it's just ruthless. You know, your top 10. Let me go through it here real quick, because it does play into this question that about like the hitter and the impact hitter. And you know, number one, as we mentioned, is JJ Weatherholt. Number two is Matthews, the left-handed pitcher. Number three is Tank Hentz, young right-hander who's moving up, will be in AAA this year. Number four is Thomas Sejasi. Number five, Yairo Padilla, who is a shortstop. Number six, Tekoa Robey, acquired from the Rangers along with Sejasi. So two of their top six were in the Jordan Montgomery trade. Number seven, Cooper Jerpy, who you mentioned, lefty, was their first-round pick. I do want to ask you about him. Number eight is Chase Davis, who was their first round pick not too long ago. Number nine is Jimmy Crooks, the catcher on the rise, soaring his way towards the majors. He's going to be the priority catcher at AAA this year. And number 10 is McGreevy, who's going to be in the majors next year, may even open in the rotation. Four of the top eight that you have ranked here for the Cardinals top 10 are position players. There were times where the Cardinals top eight would have been seven pitchers. you know, and there we would have been wondering where the position players were. And then I think, you know, a Stephen Piscotty came along, Colton Wong came along, and you started to have more position players. Weatherholt, Sejasi, Padilla, Davis, the impact hitter. Is it in that group? Some of this stuff you see with Davis and his swing, like Carlos Gonzalez, it is hard not to see the similarities. Now, does it carry? to the majors? We'll find out.
And they did some good work with him this year. He is somebody where they did adjust the swing. It's the reason he was in Palm Beach so long. Once those changes took, I think it was late May, he took off and was really good. High A, was there for a little cup of coffee, got up to double A, was pretty good. He's a bat. I think he's more of your number five, number six kind of hitter, right?
Okay. In a lineup?
Yeah. The impact in this lineup and this group here, this top 10, for me, is Weatherholt. I think legitimately has a chance to be the best player in this draft. It's him and Bezzana. And I think there's certain things that he does naturally that Bezzana doesn't necessarily do as naturally. Power, some of that stuff. He's a little bit of a bigger guy than Bezzana is. Yeah. But when you talked about the best hitters in this draft, stripped everything else away, I think most scouts you talk to, most people in the industry would have said Weatherholt was two. And the day of the draft, it's not often that in the top 10, like the steal of the draft happens. That's the way people were talking about Weatherholt dropping to seven. I don't think any of us expected him to drop that low. I don't think any of us expected him to drop below four. There was talk he was going to go one. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that decision on Bezzana was made 20 minutes ahead of time.
At the draft, like that he was going to go number one. Like he was there.
Phone calls happens. It was Bezzana or it was Weatherholt going one.
Yeah.
And it was Bezzana. I think it was the right pick for a bunch of reasons. He's just a different kind of an individual. If you sit down and talk with this guy, it's Derek Jeter. It's Brady. Like mentality wise, he's just on another level. But like talent wise, he's Weatherholt's right there. And so I think this is a guy that could be a 280 hitter with 25 home runs that plays shortstop or third base for you and makes, you know, a half a dozen all-star teams. So, I mean, if I think along the lines of what we're talking about, that's an impact player. I think that he's that kind of guy. The hit tool's there. The bat to ball's there. The approach is there. I mean, when you look at just like his underlying StatCast data, strip away the names and you just look at him. I'd interviewed for the Red Sox this offseason. And one of their processes was they gave us 2023 college data, all draft eligible guys to go through.
Okay.
And there were a couple of guys that stuck out. They had different names, but the guy that was Bezzana stuck out. The guy that was Weatherholt stuck out. And it was because of what his approach is. He doesn't chase, but he also has an 80% plus heart swing, which means he's identifying pitches. When we look at the underlying numbers, it's like, all right, like this guy doesn't expand the zone. He's not chasing stuff that's not strikes. He's not even swinging at that stuff. But if you throw him a strike in the zone, 8 out of 10 times, he's going to hit that thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the little, like, you know, tiny little numbers that make a big difference. The difference between a guy that's a 65% heart swing guy and an 80% swing heart swing guy who also is a good contact hitter, who also doesn't chase and takes his walks. He has the most robust, well-rounded profile analytically in this draft.
Is that also a profile that moves?
Yeah.
It rises.
I think he's a guy that's probably going to move pretty quick. And, you know, the comp that we've had on him, and I've bounced this off of other people, they agree. I don't think like mentality he's this guy because there's just so many, there's so few Alex Bregmans. It's Alex Bregman. I mean, this is a super polished college hitter that, you know, does everything well. And there's more raw power than there is with Bregman. Like he hits the ball harder now than Bregman hits the ball.
That is not what I expected. I expected the Dustin Pedroia comp.
Mm-mm. I think it's more like Bregman. He's a more well-rounded hitter. Like Pedroia is a good player. Pedroia had to do a lot of things, little things really well to be the guy that he was.
Right.
Pedroia wasn't hitting 25 homers. There's a chance that Weatherholt turns into a 25-30 homer bat.
Wow.
I don't think you had that. With Pedroia, you know, and I grew up here. I was in college when he came up in Massachusetts. So
he's got an MVP.
Pedroia probably will be a better defender than Weatherholt. Like,
okay,
he was a Gold Glove second baseman.
Yeah, he was exceptional.
Was the best. He was exceptional there. And you know, if he's a 55 defender, do you really care if he's a 280 hitter with 25 homers? You know, and he can run a little bit too. I mean, the hamstring slowed him down a little bit, but you know, he was a 2020 type of player as a sophomore. So,
yeah,
You know, yeah. Led the nation in hitting as a sophomore.
He had right.
an injury plagued junior year, but this was the best hitter in college baseball, you know, a year before he was drafted.
The description I got was that he had to do a little restrictor plate racing during his junior year. And mm-hmm. the folks who were aware of that had a different appreciation for how he played, kind of under control. And if you kind of were like, well, why isn't he at full throttle? Why isn't he at full speed? And you wondered about that, then you would grade him low. I think, you know, that the way that first round played out is fascinating because I think Burns goes to the Reds number two, and that was kind of the pivot. And then it gets to pick number six, and the Cardinals are like, holy cow, we're going to get one of the people that we thought were not going to be available.
Yeah.
Because it was either going to be the two-way player, Jack Caglione, right, out of Florida.
Yeah, Caglione.
Caglione out of Florida, or Weatherholt. And then Cardinals were thrilled. It was kind of remarkable to watch that unfold. And now then they had the same kind of feeling this past week when they saw their number rise up where they're like, they're not 13th in the draft. They know they're going top six. Then the six comes up and they're like, well, wait a minute, we're to top five, which they haven't been since 98. So they feel like there's a chance to kind of jumpstart, as you said, the system. They're in your top five. At number five is Yairo Padilla, shortstop. Yeah. What's his upside? What's his ceiling? And where does he fit in this conversation? Is shortstop right now, switch hitter, a lot to like. You hear great reviews. Where does he fit? And why so aggressively rank him?
Yeah, so outside of Jesus Mate, who is the Brewers' number one prospect, was the top player, more or less, outside of Leo DeVries, who signed with the Padres and skipped over the complex level entirely. This was sort of number three in the class. When we talked to a lot of scouts in DSL, we did a lot of DSL work this year, more so than we had in previous years. We really feel like that and the complexes are sort of the untapped market that, you know, we need to tap into more to do our job, our best. Teams are spending more effort in it. We sent Josh Norris down there for a week. So he worked the Dominican Summer League. He was at the Dominican Summer League All-Star Game.
That's cool.
Met with a bunch of scouts, built contacts, which is obviously our lifeblood and how we get information. Nobody got as many rave reviews outside of Mate. Nobody got as many rave reviews in the Dominican Summer League as Padilla did. And it was loud. It was loud feedback. And they also had another guy that got a lot of good feedback. I think, you know, numbers wise had maybe the best season, from a statistical standpoint in the DSL, and Rynel Rodriguez, he's 11, just outside the top 10. So when that 30 comes out, he's right there. Okay. It was a battle between him, Crooks, and McGreevy. Bat first catcher, doesn't have the catching chops of other guys in the system, or the catching chops, you know, Cardinals catchers have become synonymous with. It's more like, I think a lot of people think he ends up at first base, but it's a really good bat. Like, another guy, power, contact, on-base ability. And then you go to Padilla. Padilla, to me, you know, this can go a lot of different directions. It could go bad, right? And we could end up with a guy who's just a utility infielder that had a bunch of tools. If it goes good, this is like Fernando Tatis Jr. If this goes good, this is Ellie De La Cruz. And it's like, I don't think he's that guy in terms of, like, I don't think it's going to be a top 10 player in the game or whatever. But when this type of feedback comes in this early and it's this loud and it separates itself from other players, historically, when we get feedback like that on complex players, it's a really good sign. And it was loud. Like, I had Padilla at 9. And I talked to a couple of opposing scouts and they were like, you could probably have him at 3. I was like, I'm not going to have him over Tank. Yeah. Like, you could probably have, like, okay, I'm not going to have him over Tank. And then internal calls, my contacts are more domestic. So they kind of had to do some digging internally. And it was like, oh yeah, based on the feedback we got, he's a dude. And then he was at their winter camps or their fall camps. Mm-hmm. And he was the standout of the camps, him and Rodriguez, you know, in terms of the bat skills and, you know, how much they've grown as hitters, even in just a few months. was kind of the talk at camp. So when I started to dig in, it just seemed like there's a chance. And I said this, I said, there's a chance that come May, I'm like, I should have had this guy over Sajacy. And that's saying a lot because Sajacy's in the big leagues and I think is set up to be their starting second baseman next year.
Brendan Donovan likely will be, but yeah, Sajacy will be a factor in there. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm like, that does say a lot. So what are the traits? What are Padilla's traits that earn these loud raves?
Plus runner.
Okay.
Plus defender, plus arm. They think there's above average, so 55 to 60 power projection. And the hit tool's already there. I mean, if you look at the numbers that he put up in the Dominican Summer League, they were good. Doesn't strike out a lot. Bats of ball skills there. Just a super projectable, exciting player. And, you know, you're talking about a kid that signed in less than a year ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, and turned 17 years old during the season because his birthday is a late June birthday. So his first few games, he was 16 years old. I mean, this is a high school junior. This guy would be eligible for the draft this summer.
Wow. And it sticks at shortstop likely. I mean, there's a lot, obviously, like you said, there's a lot. Maybe in general terms, can you describe the volatility? You've a few times mentioned the scout scale, 20 to 80. You've talked about power being in that 55 to 60. You've talked about Weatherholt and where he ranks in that. Can you just talk about like maybe, and maybe those are the two players to use as examples, Weatherholt and Padilla, about the volatility and how that's revealed in sort of the scout rankings that you guys use at Baseball America?
Yeah. So we put a roll grade on everybody, which goes from 20 to 80. I don't think we have anybody in the book that's lower than a 40.
Okay.
And then what we do is we apply a risk grade more or less against that. And there's a mathematical deduction for risk against the roll grade. And that's how we come up to it, how everything's organized. So let's say a player is a 50 high, which is like an average regular. That high deducts 10 points off of that 50 grade. Let's say it is, Reynald Rodriguez, who's a 50 extreme. That deducts 15 points off of it. So he would be below the 50 high, even though they have the same roll grade. The risk grade pushes him down a little bit. Gotcha. And then the opposite side is, you know, like a Sajacy, who's a 50 medium, which means he only loses 5 points off of the grade. So he would be ahead of the 50 high and the 50 extreme, even though they're all 50s, he's in the big leagues. The risk is much more limited. And then there's like a low. So if you're a 50 low, you probably would be a guy who's been in the big leagues. You are a starter. You threw 48 innings and you have 2 innings until you graduate. We know that like you're the number 2 starter for the Rangers. Like, you know, Kumar Rocker is probably a low, like at this point.
Like McGreevy. You
know, yeah. McGreevy, I think I had a medium on, but I think some of that was just like, all right, like this was a good start. Let's see if it holds up or not. I think if he was like maybe like one caliber up, you know, one denomination up or whatever, like then he's probably a 40 low.
So would you have Weatherholt and Padilla to kind of illustrate those?
Sure.
Those extremes.
60 high on Weatherholt, which is going to put him into the top 30 prospects in the game. We don't put a lot of sixes on people. And Padilla is a 55 extreme. I think there is a chance Padilla gets into the top 100 in season. I don't know if Weatherholt, Matthews, and Tink will all be on it. Sajacy has a chance. If Sajacy gets onto the top 100, Padilla has a chance. I think he's going to be like when we do the list of players that are just off the top 100, if Padilla doesn't make it, he'll be in that list of like the next 15 guys that didn't make it that were all in consideration. And there's fans of Padilla internally besides me. And that helps. That helps you get onto those lists.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a guy that, as Jeff Luno said, you could dream on, which always kind of elevates, right? Like, hasn't had the failure yet that undermines a prospect, you know? So there's a lot of helium to the view of him just because of how young he is, how new he is and his performance. So how many, I got to imagine there are 0 80s in the prospects.
Yeah, no. Witt was a 75. Adley Rushman was a 75. Julio Rodriguez was a 75. Vlad Jr. was a 75. Acuna was a 75. I think Skeens was a 70.
Okay.
So
Weatherbowl
pretty well with
is,
the guys at the top end. We've done pretty well on.
Yeah,
that.
No kidding. Yeah, I like the track record of what you just described, but that still puts Weatherholt in good company.
Yes.
As far as just to give people a frame of reference, you know, where he is, that's really strong company to be in.
Yeah, and he hasn't had a full minor league season yet. You know.
Right. Right. And he was an impact like presence, which we didn't really discuss, is he performed right away when he got into professional baseball and jumped into a team that had kind of a three-act season. I mean, it was basically set up like a movie. You know, you had act one where it was the roster sort of returning players. Then you had act two, which was the aggressive kind of push players who were moving up in the system, and this was their first look at it. And then you had act three, which was a whole infusion of new players from the draft. And the whole time they still stayed true and won the league. So it was a very fascinating team in that regard. Yeah. So the Cardinals have a chance then. They're going to have three in the top 100 prospects in all of majors. And that, you know, because a top 30 by definition is comparing players against players in the organization. Some teams top 10, you know, 10th player might not be top 18 in another organization. But when you pool them all together and you get this top 100, the Cardinals, as you said, will have three, maybe four. What does that say about the overall health currently? Where do the Cardinals fit? You know, we mentioned that they have a long way to go, but this is their starting point. So how do they compare to their peers in that regard as far as prospect depth?
Yeah, I think they're somewhere in the teens when we talked about the 30 systems. We did that yesterday as one of the parts of the handbook process. And they were about 18th, I think. That's heavily weighted by your top 10. That holds more weight, frankly.
Gotcha.
I think from a depth perspective, they're kind of on par with some of the mid-tier teams, the Cubs, some of these other teams, where they have good top 10s. And then, you know, some of the depth starts to wane once you get into the early 20s. Where there's some other teams that just have great depth. Like you look at the Red Sox, you look at the Rockies, 11 through 30 on those systems are really good. You know, they have guys in their 20s that probably are in the teens on other teams. The White Sox are really deep right now. A lot of that is just they've traded.
Yeah. Well, they ought to be. They need to be. Yeah.
Traded. So the system is pretty deep. The Rays have a really deep system, you know, pretty much always, it feels like. You know, but I think that they're certainly not in the conversation for like the bottom 10 systems. No one talks about them like that. They have way too much depth. They have talent at the top. So they're sort of like a mid-tier system. And I think when you start off from a point like that, that's a good place to be. I mean, you go back and you look at some of the good rebuilds or system rebuilds we've seen, like with the Orioles, the Red Sox.
Yeah.
The Braves, they started from really bad points. I mean, they started from points where they were 28, 29, 30th, you know, farm system in the league. Where you look at the Cardinals, and like I said, I think they're more like 16 to 20. They're kind of in that range. Lot of pitching, not a lot of impact pitching when you go from like 11 to 30. Lot of relievers. And sort of some interesting depth types, whether it's, you know, Ratchick or Motts or someone like that. Really the upside guys are like Chen Wei Lin, you know, who had a big breakout this year. I don't think they anticipated he would be as good as he was. And then Brunelli Franco, who was a pitcher in the Dominican Summer League that they signed for $800,000. I think he was their biggest bonus in the 24 class.
He and a shortstop. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of an interesting group. And then there's just a lot of the other guys, like I said, I think are more rotation depth, whether it's Ribersi or Ratchick or, you know, Motts and some of those guys. And then a couple of relievers and Showalter and Matt Swanson, who they had gotten from the Blue Jays.
Put on the 40-man.
Yeah, on the Young deal. That was a really good deal for them. The fact that he could be, you know, a bullpen piece. He's not a closer. He closed a ton of games last year in the minors, but a guy who can come in, throw hard, and get a ton of ground balls. He's like a 60% ground ball rate guy.
So. He's going to be part of their churn this coming year.
Yeah, I would have
sort of their alternate to Pallante. With Pallante being in the rotation, the idea is to have that guy who can come in with a lot of traffic on the bases. You know, longtime Cardinal fans will know it as a Seth Maness or any Kyle McClellan started that way. You know, that kind of group. You mentioned he and Cho, two of the amateurs signed out of Asia by the Cardinals. Where are they kind of fitting in this? I mean, if you know, when they go abroad to the markets to pull amateurs out of Asia, I mean, if they get two contributors in that group, that's pretty good to do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, Juan Benchao didn't make my 30.
Okay.
It was a pretty down year for him. The strikeouts jumped up. He didn't hit for power, didn't really hit for contact. He's still, you know, only 21 years old next year, so still very young. But I would say it was a pretty bad step backwards for him. And then Lynn is 13, so Lynn's just outside the top 10. I think he's kind of in that group that if you wanted to argue him at 10, you probably could. It's turbo stuff. It's not a bat missing fastball. But he throws really hard and throws strikes, and you know, power and command, well, that will get you the big leagues, you know, and that will get you opportunities. The other parts of it in terms of maybe adding a little more wiggle onto the fastball or improving some of the secondaries, he's got time to do that. But you know, he's one of the few Cardinals arms I've seen over the last 5 years or so that legitimately has starting pitching traits and power and stuff. So he's kind of an exciting one. You know,
I think Lynn is projectable, right? Like when you see Lynn, and because of his size, because of a lot of those traits, Lynn is projectable, right? He would be on your scale, probably extreme, but higher ceiling.
Yeah. I have him as a 50 extreme. I think that the ceiling is, still probably a number four or number five starter. It just takes a lot to get to the number three, the 60 grade sort of range.
Sure.
But I think with a good year this year, you know, he shoves in Peoria and ends up in Springfield and makes, you know, 7 to 10 starts there and is pretty good. I think there's a chance that, you know, he's probably pushing closer to the top 100 just based on performance and the fact that, you know, he's got 100 mph fastball.
All right. For years, as you did the Cardinals top 30, or as you looked at it, or whoever did it looked at it, you were dealing with a lot of the same people with the Cardinals, talking to Gary LaRocque, talking to a lot of the same either managers, coaches. There's been change, and that change has brought in new names, new voices, new people from outside the organization, which has not always been the case with this group that has really prioritized continuity, has prioritized internal performance and internal promotion, even for its coaches. What has that been like this year? Have you felt a definite sea change of some sorts, just even with the people you talk to, or even with the perception of the Cardinals, because they are now having outsiders kind of move in to this development?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like in a movie where all of a sudden the sunshine shows up. It kind of feels like that a little bit, that like it's a new day. They're heading in a different direction. I think that from a pitching development standpoint and a targeting standpoint, that's going to change a lot. I think a lot of that will be Bloom's doing. It's what he did with the Red Sox. I think it's a similar model he's going to follow with the Cardinals, you know, just in terms of the devices, the measurements, a singular focus in terms of everybody moving toward the same goal, whether it be R&D, whether it be amateur acquisition, whether it be the pro side and you know, the major league team. I think that's something that when you look from a process standpoint, he did that with the Red Sox, and he did a good job with that with the Red Sox. They're now, I think, positioned as well as any other team to compete over the next couple of years. And they're in you know, a gauntlet of a division there in the AL East. So I think getting over that hump a little bit probably might be a little bit easier. I mean, you're battling with the Cubs, who will spend some money at, and throw some money at the problem. But I think if you look at that lineup right now and that rotation, it's not perfect. I think it's very beatable. I think the Brewers are the same things. They're sort of hamstrung by, you know, their ability to spend and to re-sign players. The Pirates will get better, but they still have nothing in terms of a lineup. So I think that you can turn this around pretty quick and you could have success in the major leagues and have success on down. I mean, I felt like a down year for the Cardinals last year and they still won 83 games. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, slight improvements, some other players coming up, I think could make a big difference. And I also think just their ability to improve their own players, whether that be minor league or major league guys, but also bring in players and improve those guys by saying, hey, you know, this team has you throwing this pitch here. We think that you could be throwing this here and, you know, playing this pitch off of it, right? Whatever it might be, you know, throw your slider more. And I think it's just working outside the box, and the box being what they've worked within. I don't think it's necessarily outside the box for other organizations, but I just think a lot of what they've done recently, particularly on the pitching side, and focusing so heavily on strikes. Strikes are important. They are important, but there has to be some give and take with, we think we can coax more strikes out of this guy and his stuff. You know, if he's at a 62% strike rate, is much better than this guy if he's at a 69% strike rate, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you look at that McGreevy pick and you look at some of the other players that were drafted around him for pitchers. And I think it sort of puts into perspective what, you know, they've kind of been missing on. That pick for me was kind of a big aha moment in terms of, all right, like this organization isn't as forward thinking, you know, as we think they are. I mean, Gavin Williams went a couple picks later. I know hasn't had a ton of success, but huge stuff and like is a starting pitcher. Jackson, position player wise, after that pick, I mean, Jordan Wicks went after that pick, was up in the major leagues. But Jackson Merrill went after that pick. Carson Williams went after that pick. And you start to go through some of the pitchers that went in this draft, and 2021 was probably the year where pitching was as deep as it had been in any draft, because you had so many guys that didn't get drafted in that 5 to 10 round range.
Right. And they had another year to develop. Yeah.
And we went back into the drafts. You know, Schwellenbeck was in that draft. Andrew Abbott in that draft. Robert Gasser, who's been in the big leagues, he blew out, was in that draft. Bubba Chandler, Ricky Tiedemann. These are all guys, Mason Miller. These are all guys that went after that if you had been targeting guys with bigger stuff, you would have gone out. You would have gone after some of these guys. Bryce Miller was available to everybody there in the fifth round.
Yeah. And
I think if you had done the work on Bryce Miller, I think they would have realized like, oh, wow, this guy throws strikes, repeats his delivery and has really good stuff. He was a reliever at Texas A&M and they moved him to the rotation. And it's like these guys were that 2020 year. So many things got screwed up because so many guys that would have pushed their way into the rotation in March or April never got that opportunity.
So
it was like a lost year of evaluation. And I think, you know, they looked at McGreevy, looked at the fact that he came out throwing harder than he ever had before and threw a ton of strikes. And their model said, hey, velocity plus strikes and strikeouts low walks and high strikeouts, this is our guy. Right. You know, and that's the thing, is the model for years was so heavily focused on K minus BB. And it was like how people were building their fantasy teams in 2015. You know, it's like things had passed beyond that point so much. And understanding all of those, you know, little details about pitching and being able to work within that, I think, is what just set him so far behind. And, you know, I think that that's what, as a Cardinals fan, you have to be hopeful about, is that we're progressing into a modern age that, you know, hopefully we're not going to miss on those same sort of picks that, you know, we were making. Kyle Boddy from Driveline has been really vocal about this.
Yeah.
A lot of people had McGreevy as like a third round grade, you know, He wasn't mocked that way, but I think like that was a breaking point where the smart teams and the teams that were catching up, there was a big divide. And after that draft, it was very clear of who the smart teams were and who was catching up because they got beat so bad on pitching that year.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting.
The Mariners just absolutely destroyed that draft when it came to pitching.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that's a great point. And are you hearing, as you did your research and your reporting for the top 30 then, and maybe it's too early, but I figure I'll ask, are you hearing subtle changes in evaluations of players within the Cardinals? Are you hearing even like either, it might be phraseology, it might be what the emphasis on. Are you hearing that already?
Yeah, I think when you're talking to some of the amateur people, the type of stuff they're going to be looking for is going to be a little bit different. And they're going to take a chance on those guys that are bigger stuff guys maybe than just the strike throwers, the K to BB guys that they had always targeted previously. You know, it hasn't, I think like once we get into April, May, I'll have a way better feel for that because they'll be in the middle of the process. I'll be doing reporting for our draft rankings and we'll have more in-depth conversations where they won't, it won't be as introductory to them, right? At that point, they're going to be well-versed in it. You know, whatever training that they do this off season to learn about things they don't know about, right?
Right. That's a part of it.
All that stuff will have already been in practice for a couple of months. And I think at that point, that's when you're going to start to really understand like, all right, like they're looking at this, they're looking at that. And then we'll look at the draft boards. We'll look at the types of pitchers that they go after. I know like doing the Rule 5 draft recently, I kicked myself with the Rays pick because anybody that was over 7 feet of extension, I should have written up and just been like, the Rays might take this guy.
Right, right. That's pretty good.
That's what the philosophy is. I mean, and like, it's a, it's a fingerprint, right? Like there's a certain
organizations.
I mean, you can change it, but I think like when you have a certain group and they're moving in a certain way, you do start to see those certain fingerprints that are very defining. And we just haven't gotten to that point yet with the Cardinals, but I do think that that's the reason that they hired Bloom. That's the reason he came in and was given the power he was is to remake this to an extent and get them more progressive.
It'll be interesting for me because like you talk about that fingerprint. I mean, and probably says a lot about how predictable the Cardinals came, you know, over the recent drafts. You look back to 2023, 2022, I would do a draft preview. And in that draft preview, like each year I mentioned one guy and that was the guy they took. And I mean, it's supposed to be random where they pick, right? But it was like Cooper Jerpy is a Cardinal. It's going to happen. And Davis is a Cardinal. That's the guy. And he's going to be available and they're just not going to be able to do that. Which brings me to the kind of summary that I wanted to ask you, and this will be, you know, be a good way to close. Number 6 and number 7 in your top 10 are number 6, Tekoa Roby, came from the Rangers, upside right-hander. Number 7, first round pick by the Cardinals, Cooper Jerpy, funky lefty. How much are they a test case of the next evolution of the Cardinals and how they develop pitching and what and where they fit a year from now in your rankings? How much will that, how much will we learn about the Cardinals modernizing from those two prospects?
I think a bit. They both have to stay healthy. And I think probably the biggest question mark with both of them, particularly with Roby. I mean, dating back to, you know, when he was drafted in 2020, he's dealt with a ton of injuries as a professional. Nothing huge, but it's mostly been wear and tear, you know, pitching type of injuries, that haven't required major surgeries. The stuff is there. I mean, from a stuff perspective, you know, a year ago internally, they had him over Tank. He finished the year really well. I think you could see it on the right day, and it's 3 above average pitches with strikes and a good body. But he's got to stay healthy, and he's never proven that he can do that. So that's the big question. But I do think that, you know, if he comes out and he's throwing like a gyro slider with that curveball, with the fastball, and he's throwing strikes, I think that's probably a pretty good reflection of stuff that happened in the offseason. Because there is a lot that can be cleaned up in February and March. I think people don't necessarily realize that.
Well, Matthews changed his whole career, his trajectory with what he did in the offseason.
Exactly. And then I think with Jerpy, it was an unhealthy year, He's just got to be a little bit more efficient because the strikes are there. It's just, I think for him, it's sometimes nibbling a little bit too much in the shadow zone as opposed to just going right after the zone. Mm-hmm. He is a guy that I do think once he gets up to AAA, they won't have the ABS next year, but they'll have the challenge system. I think he's probably going to steal a few more strikes than you think because everything moves so much from a weird arm slot. The thing about Jerpy that I'm still holding on to, and I'll say this out front. He was my favorite pitcher in the draft in 2022. I love Jerpy. If the velocity does get up to that 92, 93 range, he gets there. And he's shown it before. He gets there. I think he's going to be a mid-rotation arm. He misses bats in the zone at the highest rate of anybody in the system, including Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
That he gets swings in the zone and guys miss it. It's a big sweeper. It's a really good changeup. It's a flat fastball. And I mean that not in the bad sense. It's a really low release height. And he gets efficiency. So when you look at spin on a baseball, okay, with a fastball, you're propelling a fastball, right? Like it backspins. It doesn't top spin like a curveball does, which is why it drops. He gets behind that in a sense that it stays on that plane and that spin contributes to the movement at a higher percentage than other pitchers. So like think about throwing a football, right? That's the spin doesn't really contribute to how you move that football, maybe like 20%. Okay. Footballs are like sliders, like how you throw those are like sliders. Four seam fastball, you want efficiency. So he gets this weird angle and weird efficiency that allows it to stay on a plane at the top of the zone longer than it should. And what that does is, as a hitter, way that you hit a baseball, like physically hit a baseball, is it's muscle memory. The way a pitch moves at a certain plane, you remember to meet that plane with a bat, right? So when you have a flat fastball like this that doesn't drop as much as it should, it stays on that plane longer because of the spin efficiency, it misses a ton of bats. It's hard to hit. It's hard to get on plane. You have to have a pretty flat swing to hit pitches like that. And more often than not, you're going to hit more ground balls. So he has traits where if he adds a little more power and he just stays healthy and throws more strikes, which is a lot, I think that this guy could take a huge step forward next year. So he's the best test case of the two because I have less health worries. And I think there are some things just from an execution standpoint that we can probably fix with him. I mean, when he came out, when he was going into his junior year at Oregon, he skipped the Cape Cod League and he went to Driveline to work in his changeup. He came out in that spring sitting 94 to 95. If he's 94, he'll never sit that. But if he's sitting 92 to 94, 92, 93, with that sort of movement, it's going to play like it's 96. You know? So for him, I think it's just a matter of like, can you get through five innings on 80 pitches? Once he clears that hurdle, I think, you know, we'll see. But I do still very much believe that he's a rotation piece for the Cardinals. It was a couple of injury plague seasons. See if he stays healthy. It's weird mechanics. So there could be one of the reasons that he's not staying healthy. But I do think there's something there. And I do think for a more analytically focused front office, he's going to be a guy that they're like, this guy could be really good if it all works out. And, you know, at worst, maybe he becomes a bullpen piece and he's Paul Sewald. You know,
what a funky tandem that would be, though. Matthews and Jerpy.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of really weird lefties. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be something. I'm not sure. I don't know if that's been the case, you know, too often, but it would be a different look for teams. And if tradition holds, the NL Central tends to be a little bit vulnerable to lefties. Yeah. So Cardinals, they might work out for them. That is Jeff Ponce. Jeff, thank you so much for taking this time, for sharing the process, for sharing the rankings of the prospect. I am a huge Baseball America fan from my days when it was just about the only baseball coverage that I could consistently get outside of the box scores in the daily paper. It's just awesome, and it's been a highlight of my career to contribute to Baseball America all these years. So thank you very much for coming on. I'm glad that we were able to work this out. All right, give us, I will close with this. Give us a sleep. You have to pick a sleeper, right? You still have to pick a sleeper. I tend to remember that from the category. Can you reveal the Cardinals sleeper, the guy who isn't in the 30 now, who, when that handbook drops a year from now, we'll all be talking about?
Yeah. You know, it's sort of tough in that group. I think that Josh Cross, draftee this year. I think if we're going to look at guys and a Cardinals player that could potentially take a big step forward, I'm going to bet on a catcher. I just think that's probably a smart move with
that's
the Cardinals.
Pretty good.
You know, that's out good. Of Cincinnati, switch hitting catcher, kind of decent body too, 6'2", 226. There's some power in there too.
Yeah.
Got a decent bonus, and you know, he's just outside of the top 30. I think he's a guy that could take a big step forward this year. You know, I know that their amateur group spoke pretty highly about him and was like, "Hey, don't forget about Cross." So we'll see what Cross turns into. That's my sleeper from outside the 30.
There you go. That's Jeff Ponce of Baseball America, prospect writer there. You can read his top 10 for the Cardinals. It's on Baseball America's website right now and a lot of coverage there. But the handbook comes out in the spring, correct?
And yes, it does.
How does it feel to be done?
Well, actually, no, probably be out maybe late January, early February.
Oh, okay, so just in time for spring training. Caught
up from a couple years ago, yeah. We'll have the PDF in people's hands maybe before Christmas.
Oh, wow, that'd be great.
Yeah, so we were way ahead of it. We had, like, our most productive year in terms of, like, the production side of it. Everything was turned in, and, like, we're doing last edits when I get off here. I got a couple chapters to read, and then I think we're sending the book to press today, and then we may have it in people's mailboxes or, you know, email boxes by 4 o'clock on Monday. So you may have
what a gift. That's cool. Yeah. All right. Congrats. I know what a big deal that is. So congrats on finishing it. And it's like you get to celebrate the holidays with a whole different realm of that being done. Like, you
don't have to do anything for weeks. I got like 2 straight weeks off. I don't have to think about anything. There's no baseball. The moving target isn't moving.
That's fantastic. Excellent. Well, thank you again, Jeff. This has been great. I will definitely drag you back onto this podcast to talk about the Cardinals in the future. And really, I would like to talk to you again so we can like take a like temperature of the changes next year and see if they're actually manifesting. So again, find all of Jeff's work there at Baseball America and the pages of the magazine, which you can subscribe to. Look for that handbook a lot earlier than I advertise, and do dig in because it's not just a handbook really for this year. It's a guidebook for the Cardinals because this is the future that they're looking at. These are the names that are going to get a lot of attention as the Cardinals rebuild. Jeff, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This has been the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design. You find the Cardinals constant coverage at stlta.com or in the pages of the Post Dispatch. I think that's all. I just have that tagline to read. Oh, the best podcast in baseball is wherever you get your podcasts and all of that. Jeff, thank you again, man. This has been great. I love talking about it and hope to have you on again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.